This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Spanning the centuries this hour, we'll see how Texas is revisiting some century-old oil boom politics. And it's the first bona fide trial of the century in South Africa for accused murderer and celebrity athlete Oscar Pistorius. But we begin with the centuries-old echoes of nationalism emerging with historic intensity in Ukraine and Russia. Parts of Ukraine are under occupation by pro-Russian troops today. There has been an ultimatum issued to Ukraine by the Russian Navy Command to surrender its forces in Crimea. To some, maybe most, in Russia, Ukraine is still a part of Russia. Ukraine's chief naval officer seems to have taken that view by defecting over the weekend to Russia, raising tensions further. He is now facing treason charges in Kiev. The fledgling Ukrainian leadership in Kiev, meanwhile, has called on the West, including NATO, to rally against a Russian invasion. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is headed to Ukraine. Russia's foreign ministry, meanwhile, has warned the U.S. to stay out of this crisis, calling warnings from Secretary Kerry and President Obama unacceptable threats and Cold War rhetoric. The West, the Moscow statement says, is ignoring militant anti-Russian and anti-Semitic extremists among the Ukrainian opposition who Moscow believes were behind the coup in Kiev. British Foreign Secretary William Hague says this crisis could easily ripple across Europe economically and in waves of refugees with an intensity not seen since the wars in the Balkans.
It's difficult to rank these things, but it is certainly the biggest crisis in Europe in the 21st century.
For a look at the rising tensions in Crimea, we go first to Natalia Antolava in the regional capital, Simferopol. Natalia, welcome.
Thank you very much.
There's a Russian majority in Crimea, and that makes it unique in all the territories in Ukraine. What's the feeling like today as everyone has to ask themselves, am I Russian or am I Ukrainian?
Extremely tense, I would say. I've been struck for the last few days by how fragile the ethnic balance here is. 60% of Crimea are Russian, as you said, but then there are other groups as well. There is an indigenous group here. They're Crimean Tatars. They're Muslims. They are only about 15% of the population, but because they're indigenous, they are very important. They're very vocal. They're also Ukrainians, of course, and the divisions amongst them are quite extraordinary. And they've deepened by the presence of the Russian troops. Yesterday, I was at the demonstration of the pro-Russian Putin supporters, basically those who welcome the presence of the troops, those who say they want them here. And, at that demonstration, the argument broke out among a couple of people saying, you know, we don't want Tatars here, one of them was saying. The other one was screaming about how bad the Ukrainians have been to the Russians. There are people who are very worried that the presence of Russian troops will upset this very delicate ethnic balance here. And you can really feel that tension already.
And call it ethnic balance or call it something that Joe Stalin tried to put to rest in the 20th century, all of these competing ethnicities within Russia, they were moved around, they were suppressed, and all of this seems to be erupting at once in Crimea.
Absolutely. And, people here are saying that they're going to be the victims of that big game that is being played out here in Crimea. And I think people realize very clearly that unless they manage to not to allow the outsiders to basically provoke them against each other, this is going to end very, very badly. I mean, you know, they're constant, this kind of snippets of tension at the gas station. Yesterday, we stopped to fill up the car, and this man runs into the gas station, basically screaming on the phone, what am I going to do with my family? How am I going to move my mother? She's in a wheelchair. And he was a Tatar. He says that he's heard that, the Russian neighbors are sort of turning against them. There are all sorts of dynamics that are playing out here, and people are saying, many people are saying, including some ethnic Russians I have spoken to, that because of the presence of the Russian troops, all of this has really amplified.
Is there anyone in Crimea who is rising above this, who's advocating to keep outsiders from escalating this tension so that, as you say, the people in Crimea don't become the victims of a wider conflict? Any character to confront Vladimir Putin or to address the West?
I wouldn't say that there is one person in particular, but certainly a lot of people who are I have been speaking to are very aware of how fragile the situation is. And, you know, people are organizing themselves. For example, I went to several neighborhoods where people are trying to do joint patrols where the neighbors get together. You know, what makes the situation even worse, even more complicated. And this has happened in all of the post-Soviet conflicts in Georgia, in everywhere else in the Caucasus. Normally, once the Russian regular army comes in, they're followed by the irregular fighters, the mercenaries, who are often Cossacks. Now, I have not seen any of them, but everybody that I've spoken to, at least all the Tatars and all the Ukrainians that I have spoken to, say that the Cossacks are already coming in, and they're coming in to stir up the tensions. So there is a very keen awareness of the fact that, you know, this could be huge. If neighbors turn against each other, then, you know, this is going to be a bloodbath. And I think people are trying their best not to allow this to happen and not to allow any provocation. And those night patrols are one of the examples. But it's so tense here, and everyone is on such an edge that it will take very, very little for this to get out of control.
Well, with an ultimatum on the table and a 60% Russian majority in Crimea, do the Tatars and the Ukrainians have any choice but to surrender?
I don't think surrendering will be an option. I mean, for the Tatars and the Ukrainians, surrendering isn't even on the table. The other question is, what will the Ukrainian army do? And the latest that we're hearing right now is that, you know, for the last 48 hours, the Russian military, although they're still, you know, in unmarked uniforms, but they are definitely Russian military, have been taking over the various military bases around Crimea. And in some of them, some of these bases, there have been standoffs. For example, I went to a base earlier today where the standoff started yesterday. The base is completely surrounded by the Russian troops, but the Ukrainians are inside, not letting them in. So now the latest that we've heard that the Russians have given Ukrainians an ultimatum telling them that unless they surrender those bases in the next, I believe, 24 hours, they said, that they will be taken over. Now, that is also quite serious. But in that case, you know, probably the Ukrainian army will surrender, because, again, not allowing Russians into those bases will end up in bloodshed.
Reporting from a very tense situation, Natalia Antilava from Crimea. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Inching closer to a military confrontation between Ukraine and Russia. Today, some analysts have concluded that Vladimir Putin has effectively accomplished a takeover of the Crimean territory without firing a shot. That's what former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Stephen Pfeiffer told us. He's currently a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
Well, I think the situation is that the Russian military, effectively in violation of Russia's commitment to Ukraine's territorial integrity, has taken over the peninsula of Crimea. The question now is, will the Russians halt military actions at this point, or will there be a broader military intervention into eastern Ukraine? I think the latter would be a big mistake. While the Ukrainians have shown great restraint, Ukrainian military forces in Crimea have stayed on their bases. I think a wider intervention in eastern Ukraine would lead the Ukrainian army to fight.
Is this a replay, do you think, of the dispute between Georgia and Russia just some years ago, back in 2008?
Well, it looks something like that story. But in this case, though, there was, as far as anyone in the West saw, no threat to ethnic Russians in Crimea. There was no threat to the Russian military installations in Crimea that they have by treaty with Ukraine. A good portion of the Russian Black Sea Fleet is based there. And it looks like this was a manufactured crisis. In fact, there were a series of things that looked as if they were designed to provoke a Ukrainian military response in Crimea. And then when the Ukrainians did not respond, the Russians just went in on their own.
And there are diplomats in Western Europe saying this is the biggest crisis for Europe in the last 20 or 30 years. Do you share that view?
I think this is a huge crisis for Europe, and it's a case where Russia has basically torn up the rule book. And I would guess about a week ago, there was a perception that Russia was not happy with the turn of events in Kyiv and might take steps to destabilize the new Ukraine government. But pretty much all analysts expected the Russians would do something in the economic sphere, raise the price of gas, block Ukrainian imports. I think people were caught off guard by the fact that Mr. Putin leaped over those and went right for this military intervention in Crimea.
As a former ambassador to Ukraine from 1998 to 2000, you're probably well aware of the Russian name for Ukraine, right?
Very much so. Crimea is the only area in Ukraine where ethnic Russians constitute a majority of the population. It's about 60%. There's always been this special relationship. Crimea actually was part of Russia until 1954, when Nikita Khrushchev made a decision to transfer it from the Russian Federation to the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic. But when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, all agreed that you would recognize the states in their current borders, and the Russians at that time recognized Crimea fully as part of Ukraine.
Even though they still refer to Ukraine informally as Little Russia.
That's true. It's one of those things. I remember a conversation I had with a very good, very senior Russian diplomat back in the 1990s. And his comment was, you know, when it comes to Crimea up here, and he points at his head, I understand it's an independent country. He goes down here and he points at his heart. It's going to take a little bit longer. And I think with Vladimir Putin, you have somebody who's not looking at Ukraine in those terms. You're looking at somebody who really does want to extend Russian influence in the post-Soviet space and is now showing that he's resorting to means that people did not expect to push that ambition.
So perhaps we are at the ultimate red line here. If there is a move beyond Crimea, beyond this level of occupation, and I use the word guardedly, of territory inside Ukraine, Vladimir Putin suddenly becomes the Milosevic of a greater Russia policy in the same way that Slobodan Milosevic was the greater Serbia architect of the 1990s.
First of all, let me just say, you know, your term occupation, I mean, what you're now seeing in Crimea is a military occupation of the peninsula by Russian forces. There's no doubt about it. But if Mr. Putin goes beyond that, there are big risks for Russia. A Russian military intervention in eastern Ukraine would lead to a situation where some Ukrainian military units would fight. There would be Ukrainian nationalists from western Ukraine who I believe would head east and conduct basically a guerrilla war. It could be very nasty for Russia. And my hope is that the Russian military understands this and is telling Mr. Putin, this is not something we want to get into. In the meantime, though, there are other costs for Russia. When the Russian stock market opened up today, the main index fell by 10% and the ruble's at an all-time low. There's a lot of concern in Russia, I think, about what's going on between Russia and Ukraine right now.
He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, Stephen Pfeiffer's former ambassador to Ukraine from the United States from 1998 to 2000. Ambassador, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Later this hour, more on the divisions between Ukraine and Russia, a story told in some very old literary voices. And the Oscar Pistorius murder trial has begun in Pretoria, South Africa. Stay with us.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.